Misha think that Yusha will begin a cease and desist from Misha Mouse Overlord. The opinion shared on this podcast does not represent the stance of the host's employers, past, present, nor future. And now, please enjoy our podcast. Sad.
You are listening to the Geeks and Grimes podcast with Bex, Rich, and Mike. And now, let's get our show started.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Always Socially Distanced podcast. My name is Mike. I will be with Dex and Rich right soon. But first, as we said, you may follow us on Twitter as at Geeks and Gripes, and Facebook and Instagram and Twitch, we will be found as Geeks and Gripes. Don't forget to visit our Patreon and become our Patreon. We are also known as Geeks and Gripes in there. And we will hope to hear from you in any of our mediums. You can also find us in YouTube for some videos, and go to Twitch or YouTube for our sidecast with Dex and Ari, which was finally, we released one of them. This will eventually be our exclusive content. Now, the previous episode, we had to cut it short. It was way too long for a single episode. So this will be now our 9th episode. And in this episode, we will continue our top 10 video games.
Top 10 video games!
And we will proceed with what is our number 4 in our lists. So we hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you for staying here with us. Let's press on to number 4.
Number 4. I'll get mine out of the way because I already mentioned it. Mine is Symphony of the Night and the Castlevanias in general, but Symphony of the Night to me was like just amazing. The few ones I have like in my top 3 would like go above Symphony of the Night in my life, so that's my 4.
All right, I'll go with mine because mine is mainstream. I hate this genre, but it's my number 4 for many reasons, and I'll get your reaction as soon as I say the name. And to me, it's its own franchise. So, the Super Smash Brothers Melee game.
Okay.
Yeah. Totally deserved, like I mentioned in our tops games of all time.
It's
just like an amazing game.
It's the only game where I had a reasonable superiority complex.
No, dude, no. I'm sorry. Like, I still remember the day they were playing that game in our college's like rec room, and I called you up, and you're like, "Oh well, I'm free." Sits down in the morning, I get through all my damn classes, I get back over there, he's still there, hasn't left his seat, hasn't left his controller, they're ganging up on him 3-1, and they still couldn't beat him, and then he utters the most diabolical words to ever come out of his mouth.
I'm gonna switch to Yoshi.
I'm gonna pick Yoshi now. Oh god.
Yoshi was ridiculous. Oh my god, yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, you want to get the crap beat out of you by a smiling green dinosaur that goes, Yoshi! Yeah, sit down. It's going to be fun.
So, exactly. It was funny because I could tell the second time I played with them, they trained just to beat Marth. And they still had a hard time. So I'm like, okay, next iteration, I'm going to pick Yoshi. And I made it pink. And the first words... The first words that came out of somebody's mouth was, nobody can be good with a Yoshi. That's impossible.
Poor fools. Poor deluded fools.
That was the first
Yoshi
person.
Your Marth were like crazy bars, like sand songs about your like Marth. And your Yoshi was just as good. So
that was the first person I kicked out of the field. Like, although he foolishly used a Bowser, and he got the crap beat up out of him. Like, he lasted 10 seconds before he lost his first stock.
See, I always found that funny, because also you had the whole part where it's like, you know, I'm bored. Hey, I'm going to play a game and watch. Like, wait, you can actually win with game and watch?
Of course.
Look at this.
And I trained people, not just played the game. I trained people, and all the people I got to train ended up being really good. Then I guess I got old and my reflexes just died down. I'm just not as good anymore as I used to be, but...
It happens.
Yeah, I love that game. It's the only game I think I've played 600 plus hours on it. I remember the record.
Wow.
You get to... Nice. When you play 5,995 hours, it actually gives you a bonus saying, you have played this game for 5,995 hours. You've officially paid 1 cent per hour.
Oh, wow.
Damn. So my number four is Sly Cooper 2, Band of Thieves.
Interesting. Never played it.
Like, the Sly Cooper series is
Did you say favorite. Two?
I thought yeah, Sly Cooper 2.
No, oh, okay, the game's 2. Sorry, I thought you said this was your number 2. Sorry.
No, this is my number 4 is Sly Cooper 2, Band of Thieves. And it's, like, out of all the platforming PlayStation exclusives that were back in the day, Ratchet & Clank, Jak and Daxter, Spyro, Sly Cooper was my favorite series. Like, the characters, I love them. The style was... kind of like movie, like a heist kind of thing, and all the characters were just amazing. Like, they were all their own unique personalities. They were funny, the humor was on point, and Sly Cooper 1 was good, but you could notice that it's like it was the company's first jump into this kind of game, and they weren't sure how it was gonna go. But when it got good reception, they made 2, and then 3, and then 4. And, you know, this is where I would put Sly Cooper 5, if I had one! Because they haven't continued the series. And, you know, it's not like they left the last game on a freaking cliffhanger or something. Nah, you know, whatever. I'm not bitter at all.
Sounds like you have unresolved issues there.
Yeah, I know, right? But the sneaking elements, I love that, because there were some challenges where you literally had to go through parts of like levels without setting off a single alarm, without letting any of the like roaming gangs of just goons catch you or hear you or anything, and it was great. And then Sly Cooper 2 lets you use the 3 characters. It actually gave Bentley, which is the turtle, and then Murray, which is the hippo, their own personalities, their own levels. They played totally different. Like, Bentley was weaker, so melee attacks really were not your thing, but he could hack, he could put bad guys to sleep, he could drop bombs. The Murray was just pure beef. He was brawler. He couldn't sneak worth a damn. He could barely jump high, but you could just punch your way through everything. And then Sly, obviously, was the one with all the tricks, all the gadgets, because he's the master thief. And that series, I loved it. I could play those games all over again. I complete all of them 100%.
All right, so it's time for our top 3!
Top 3, yep.
Echo over Echo.
Echoception. So I'll start this one because I know for a fact none of you have played this game. Or probably not gonna put it at this high up, but I love this game. Stardew Valley.
Interesting. Interesting choice. I like the genre. I've never played Stardew Valley, but I love the genre of like the builder, crafter, farming games.
So like back in the day I got into the Harvest Moon games, I got into the Rune Factory, which Rune Factory was more combat and also like farming, but Harvest Moon was just pure farming, build up the city, build up like the town and your relationships and all that. But Stardew Valley has everything. It has everything. You can play this game over and over and over and over and over again. You can play it in multiple different ways. You can be pure farmer. You could be like raise livestock, you can just be full-on adventure, you can interact with every single character, you can ignore all of them. Like, I just love it, and it gives you so many options. It's like, oh, your character's a guy, he can marry anybody. Your character's a girl, she can marry anybody. And it's actually like a, like all the characters have great stories, and it's not really that like cheery. There's some characters that have like really messed up stories and psychological issues that you learn only by befriending them. Like, there's a guy who's a war veteran who comes back from a war and he has PTSD, straight up PTSD. And as you progress your friendship with him, you know, you get him to, you know, get treatment for that. But it is like, it is messed up.
I've heard really good things about Stardew Valley. I've played a lot of those, like from Terraria to like My Life at Portia. Like I like the genre. Like I'm playing Animal Crossing now. It's similar, not the same, but I've never played Stardew Valley. I don't know why. I think it's the graphics kind of put me off or something. But I've never played Stardew Valley.
I mean, kudos to them to get on a top 10 list, being a modern game.
Yeah. No, like legit, this game is, it's just, it's a game that you play when you just want to avoid everything, when you just need your brain to shut down and relax and have fun. I would play this game. I've been stressed lately. I've been thinking of just starting it back up and just playing a new playthrough.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've heard like really good things about it, and I know I will like it if I start it, but I think the graphics kind of off put me, and I played Terraria, but Stardew Valley, there's something about it that just didn't click with me.
All right, so
okay.
My
what
number
about your
three.
Number threes?
Well, my number three is very stereotypical, or I guess not stereotypical. It's expected, I guess, to be on top three. Maybe not exactly the game, but it's there. Super Mario World.
Okay.
Oh wow.
Super Mario World is a game that I can say and have proven over and over again to my kids that I have the entire damn game memorized. Maybe I don't have the skills to sometimes do what I used to do when I was younger, but I have the damn game memorized. And I showed my kids when they started a new game, and within 15 minutes, I already was in special. So I 100% that game. I go back to it. I 100% the game again. I keep going backwards. I knew about the glitch that if you were Tiny Mario on a Yoshi, you were invulnerable to the ghosts in the ghost ship.
Oh God, I remember that.
Yeah,
I figured that out by accident.
And you know, the game required you to beat certain levels many times because it counts if you beat it and then find the secret, etc. It had 8 worlds. The worlds were entirely different. The fortresses were insanely difficult compared to anything else. They were usually all side-scrollers full of ball and chains underwater or squishy things that just wanted to kill you. And the last fortress was just full of those pillars with Spike that you had to time it almost musically to be able to survive. That was an amazing game. It's an amazing experience. And I see even my kids today just go back to playing that game again and again.
And not to mention that it was the first thing you'd like booted when you started your Super Nintendo, right? Like,
yeah.
It was like the beginning of a new era. You left your like, you know, old school NES, and you boot your system with Mario World. The memories are insane. Like me playing with like my mom loved the game. I love the game. I've like 100% the game a million times. It totally deserves a top three.
So
like honestly, I love the game, and like you said, it's attached to everybody who grew up with the Super Nintendo, that game is attached to it.
Yep.
I don't know, I guess since I eventually lost like my connection with Nintendo, like with the Mario games, that's why I didn't actually put that one in my list.
It's interesting because I still remember I beat the game for the first time in February 14. Probably was.
You know, like I don't know if like Mario had that, like they actually defined the system. There was like a game that you can kind of like put through a whole era of gaming. Like I don't know if you guys watched the movie, I think it was called The Wizard with the Mario 3 guy. Like there was this kid that was like a gaming wizard, and he would qualify for these like super finals, and it was a game nobody had ever played before. and it was Super Mario 3.
Oh, that's the wizard.
And somehow he knew how to blow. Yeah, and somehow he knew how to blow two whistles and get to World 8. Yeah.
That's the wizard.
So, Mario 3 was its own thing. Like, for NES, Mario 3 was, like, way beyond its time. Amazing. And then Mario World was the same thing for the whole Super Nintendo time. Mario 64 was its own thing. Like, I think that, especially those three Marios, they were, like, just really ahead of their time and have, like, a special place in everybody's hearts. But definitely Mario World, I would put most probably as the best Mario. Either that or 64.
Yeah. To me, it's almost a three-way tie between those exact three games. I just had to pick one, and I think I go back more to play Super Mario World than any other game of the three.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, my turn. My top three. They're all RPGs, I think. But this game, my number three, I couldn't own it back in the day because I remember the ticket price for the game when it first came out for a Super Nintendo game. It was $120. And only one of my friends had it. He got it because him and his brother put together their birthday money.
Damn.
And bought it between both of them, and then let all of our friends borrow it so we could all play it. But it totally deserves top three. Sometimes I will wake up and I say it's the best game of all time, but I'll have it three in this list, and it's Chrono Trigger. Trigger is one of those games that, you know, multiple endings, one of the best definitions of turn-based RPG there is, time traveling, the characters, they were all, like, amazing, had amazing backstories, and you actually had to, like, go through their backstories to get them to join. And it had the anti-hero, like, he was one of, like, the baddest bad guys, and eventually, you know, you start warming up to him. And it was just one of those games that, you know, like, 100 hours were not enough to find, like, even, like, 50% of what you could find in this game. It's like you would just keep on going back. And I think it was the first game that ever had the New Game Plus. So you would finish the game, and it would create a brand new save file where you have everything you had collected in the previous, but you could play the whole game again, and you really wanted to do so, like, because there were endings that were only accessible in a New Game Plus. You could tweak how you reacted to different things in the story. There was, like, one of the endings was, like, you start a New Game Plus and immediately go through this, like, new gate and finish the final boss. That was one of the endings. So it was, like, the complexity, like, every bad guy had his own, like, personality, and you would meet them in multiple timelines, and it was just a fascinating game. I liked the sequel, Chrono Cross. I didn't like it at first. It grew on me. I have it, like, a lot of, like, love for Chrono Cross. When you finish Chrono Cross, they kind of finish the story. Like, you see some of the characters that were, like, in the Chrono Trigger, and they have this scene that is, like, recorded, like, live action with, like, a Japanese girl walking through Tokyo. And since the game is time traveling, it's like, this character from the first game eventually made it to real life, and you know, I had goosebumps when I saw that ending. It was it's one of those games that it's just too good to not be in my top three.
Okay, like Chrono Trigger is a game that is well known and well loved by pretty much almost every single gamer out there.
Yep.
Okay, so now we get to number two.
I'll go first since we've already talked about this game. My number two is actually A Link to the Past.
Nice.
It was a close tie between that and Ocarina of Time, but I feel that I went back more to play Link to the Past. It even got me to repurchase it at some point. That's how much I like to replay this game over and over again. Truly, I still hate the Manhandla. It's not the Manhandla, the Wallmasters on World, the third dungeon.
They can die in a fire.
Yes, that's kind of the worst thing in the world. It's like, hey, I'm progressing. Boom, boom, hand, grab, outside. It's like, yeah. Really? So it's the first Zelda with a story, with a true story, and it's completely memorable. So yeah, we've talked about it, so I won't dwell too much on it. That's my number two. It's still, in my opinion, the best Zelda franchise, but I don't want to take away from Ocarina of Time nor Link's Awakening. It's like, I just happen to like this one over the other two. It's not, but they're so close together in enjoyability that, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
The Pole's voice. Kill it. Kill it.
Oh, God.
Yep. Pole's voice. Yeah, so.
Nope.
So you can go ahead with your own number twos now.
My number two is a game that has to be up there because of how many hours I've sank into it. I've played it for over a decade. I stopped playing it recently. I measure how much I've played this game and how many days each of my character had. Like when I type played, it was World of Warcraft. I played World of Warcraft 2006 to like maybe last year. And each of my characters had like, there's some that have 36 days played and 40 days played, and I have like maybe 12 of them that are that high. I know people who have more than 12, you know. So it's just a game I just put too many hours not to have like so many memorable memories, and I met people through here. I had relationships that we just played this game together, created characters together. It's like, you know, part of my life since like college all the way through my adult life. It's too much to not consider one of the best games of all time for me.
Cool. I played it, and if you play it obviously with a group, it's much more fun, but like once the group left, oh god, it just became a chore, and I just fell out of it. I had some good memories in it, and you know, it was fun, but I guess you really need to have that group that kind of like gives you that support for you to like keep going.
It depends. Like there's so much story in it, you know, like you can just be walking through, like there's so many biomes, so many worlds. You can go to different worlds, like dimensions, like there's so much to it. Like you could be just walking like for 15, 20 minutes because you want to go to this like village in the edge of the map, and all of a sudden there's somebody who's like carriage broke, and they need you to get them this, you know, little piece of thing so you can fix their wheel, or you know, like it's an actual world. Like there's stuff happening, there's people walking around and taking goods to different towns, there's like arenas, there's like competitions, there's like different towns, different, like there's jungles, there's deserts, like it's literally world. I would even call it worlds because there's multiple worlds and multiple dimensions, and you know, it's like the feeling of having, you know, like 12 million people were like just walking around. You see them, you go to one of their cities, it's like going to New York but in a game, you know. And I remember there were like fireworks for 4th of July, they would celebrate all like the holidays. It was a lifestyle, and it was kind of worrisome. I knew people who like flunked college because of World of Warcraft. You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
You would say you would be like absorbed. Like it everything in your life was put to the side, and you were this character. You know, like you were this character, and you had your guild, and guild would raid at certain hours, and you like real life, we would be less important than being there at 8 p.m. because otherwise you wouldn't be pulled into the raid, or you would be kicked out of a guild. You know, like it had its flaws. I have friends that, for instance, I have one of my friends, my dearest friends, that he flunked college because of World of Warcraft in part, but he was a genius of economics. Like he would play the auction house in ways that you could study and teach in college level classes. But he flunked college, you know, like it was a game that it just absorbed your life. It's if you liked it, there was nothing like it. And I compare every other game I've ever played to it, and it's just amazing. I every expansion, I feel like I should at least try it, and I put at least a month in it just to try the new expansion. So it also gave us
a staple of video game lore and memes. Yeah.
Leroy Jenkins. It's this thing, like if you have never seen the video of the big blue dress on YouTube, you should. It's one of the best things people who like World of Warcraft have created. You know, like it's a whole community. You know, like it was like literally at its prime, it may have been like 16 million people playing at the same time. It's like way too many people. If you haven't played it, you know at least 5 people who have played it through your life. It's that big. And I just think it deserves a spot. I played too much of it to not have it in my top 3.
Okay. Well, for my top 2, I got one question and one question only. Explosions? That is Mr. Torg from my number 2 spot, Borderlands 2. Like, I don't like shooter games. I'll be completely honest. Like, I've never really liked shooter games. But the Borderlands franchise, it just sucked me in because it was a different kind of shooter. It was fun. It was twisted. It was messed up. You had a billion guns of every single. It's like Diablo in that aspect. You know, mm-hmm. you see the explosion of guns when you beat this like high level boss, and you're like, ooh, is this better? I need it. Is this better? I need it. Why can't I grab this? I'm full. No, damn it! Now I have to spend like 5 minutes here deciding what I'm gonna drop.
It was like an RPG, but with guns.
It's amazing, yeah. Like, it's so awesome. And then Borderlands 2 had so many memorable characters. It had one of the best villains in any video game franchise. You can fight me on this, but you will lose. And that is Handsome Jack. Because this guy is lovable, but you also love to hate him. And at the same time, he thinks he's the hero of the story. And you are the bad guy. And the game had so many twists, so many WTF moments that I love it. And I've played the heck out of it. I played all the characters. I leveled them up. I played all the expansions. I did raids. And and even with all the time I put in, it's a minuscule amount to some of the players out there who can literally raid a boss with nothing and still beat it. And it's ridiculous, but I love the game. I love everything about it. I'm playing Borderlands 3 now. And yeah, it has everything I like in the game, like comedy, good characters, great story, unexpected moments, and billions upon billions upon billions of different guns. Okay. Awesome. So now we go to number 1. Dan 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 dan
dan dan dan dan dan dan dan
SpongeBob, yep. From the Krabby Patty training video. Yep. Okay. So,
did we all pick the same number uno. One? Did we all pick the same Ichibang?
I don't know. I haven't heard enough of this in the list so far. So I'm thinking we might have done like
probably. Okay. So yeah. I'm just gonna throw it out there. Final Fantasy VI.
Six. Yep. Final Fantasy VI.
Final Fantasy VI.
It's the best game of all time.
Let me
just clarify.
This we is didn't not planned, reveal our by the
list.
Way.
Yes. Yeah, we exactly. didn't reveal our list. This is fully like we were like talking through this for the first time right now. And yeah, I guess Final Fantasy VI is the best game of all time. I'm so glad that we agree on that.
I know, right?
Yeah. We purposely did not reveal our list. We may have mentioned games, but we never revealed the order of anything because we really believe reaction was going to be a part of what sold this episode. So this was not planned.
Oh, man. When none of us said a Final Fantasy game, I'm like, wait, is this going to be what I think it is? Yep, it is. So Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III US, however you want to call it.
I refuse to call it three.
Yeah, it's six. Okay. So we all have it as the best game of all time. I am proud to like say that I finished the game with three characters. Like, the minimum number of characters you could finish the game with was three. You would have to have, in the second world, you start with Celis. You need Edgar to cross for the boat, and then you need Setzer to fly. So if you take those three and you like 99, level 99 them, you can finish the game, and the ending changes if you finish it with just three. And I don't know anybody else who has done that.
Oh. I leveled up every single character to a ridiculous point. Like even Mog, Umaro, Gao, all of them. I got them to a point where nothing could have surprised me. Nothing.
Like I have seen so many different completions of this game. I've played it multiple times. I remember that I had a friend back in the day that had a controller you can program, and he would stay in that river with Ultras.
Oh god, yeah.
And he would
program
his controller, so he would keep on fighting while he would go to school, and he would come back and everybody was level 99, and every character you got after that was level 99 by dependence on the previous one, but his characters were never maxed out because you didn't get the levels with all the equipment you could have put on them. So they were never maxed out characters, but they were level 99 from like really early in the game. So yeah, that... I've played this game multiple times, multiple ways. I finished it with three characters. If you finish it with three characters, the ending is really similar, but like in the ending, there's a part where Sabin moves a big boulder, and all three of them have to push it together. And they were saying, "Oh, I wish Sabin was here," you know, like stuff like that changes in the ending. And I can say that I've seen like almost every variation of the ending you could get. I've played this game way too many times. It's amazing.
I mean, let's not forget what made the game. His name is Kefka.
Woo! God, that laugh. Jesus.
He's the most messed up character ever created. Like, as evil goes, Kefka's up there.
Yeah. It's like every bad thing you can think of, he did it and enjoyed while doing it on top of that.
He was like the Joker. Maybe I can't say if he was as twisted or more twisted than the Joker, because I've never seen the Joker poison a whole like kingdom, kill every single person.
You haven't read enough comics. That's all I can tell you.
I guess. But he was the theme around Kefka was the Joker. You know, he felt like the Joker. He looked like the Joker. I think that was the idea behind him.
See, to me, like I played this game before I got into like comics and DC and everything. So this character, like, the game surprised me at every single turn. Oh, okay, so I'm in the castle and he can't get into. Wait, what is he doing? What is he pouring into the river? Huh. Okay, I'm sure I'll be fine. The entire castle's dead. My wife and child is dead. Oh, perfect.
You would get the feeling of every character, you know, like that was Cyan's story. Like you would feel his passion for like going through the story. You would love every character. Like Locke's story was amazing. And when you the way you find him in the after the critical like changing of the world, or world part two, where you find him kind of played through his story really well. You see how each of their characters like evolve through like the traumatic experiences of like the ending of the first half of the game. Some of them just went into full like depression. I lost everything. I lost my granddaughter. I joined this cult, you know, like this one went and like created an orphanage and has been taking care of these kids for like forever. It's just amazing. Like it was just like an experience. Like you really connected with all the characters. You felt why they were helping each other. You really wanted to get all of them. I think it was a one of the best stories ever told.
I mean, and part of it is also, like, you would see things that you've never seen in a game and you would never thought it could have been pulled off with 16 bits, like the opera scene.
Oh, God, the opera. Oh, yeah. The music, everything. Oh, I love that.
It's like, how did they pull that off?
It's just like in Final Fantasy IX. Like, in Final Fantasy IX, like, the I Want to Be Your Canary play. Like, I can just imagine, like, somebody doing the actual, like, opera for Final Fantasy VI as a real opera and the real play for I Want to Be Your Canary, and I would watch the hell out of it.
Right.
They have done, like, countless videos of this. They, like, there's remakes, there's, like, actual new versions of the game that had a better, like, cutscene for it. Like, it's amazing, and I will just still go back to, like, that MIDI music, like, you know, like a keyboard singing of a voice. But the song was amazing. It's one of the few songs I could actually play on a keyboard. It's like it's just a game. It's just like a something that defined your life if you played it back in the day. I would say, like, even if you play it now, it would have, like, a great impact in your life.
Yeah, and that's one of the games where they clearly point out that if something can go wrong, Kefka will just poison it.
Dude, the game taught me that some video games will have permanent choices. Like, up until that point, it's like, oh, Mario, oh, like, you know, Zelda, Contra, all these games, like, oh yeah, that's fun, I die, I just keep going. In this game, it's like, do you want to wait for Shadow?
Oh my god, that was the choice.
Yes. Do you want to wait for Shadow? Yes. 4, 3, do you want to wait for Shadow? No. Well, he's gone.
Yeah, you lost him forever.
You lost one of the greatest characters you could have. One of the strongest characters. Yeah, no, sucks for you.
Learn some patience, kid. People don't know that Shadow had, like, dreams. Like, if you had him in the party when you would go to inns, you could see his story in his past dreams. Like, it's amazing. This game has so many little, like, things that if you just play through it, you would never know. You know, like, yeah, he you could see all of his past through it, you know? It was just crazy, like, how much detail and how much feeling is on each of the stories.
I mean, the only sad part is this game is so complete and perfect that I don't think any modern-day engine would be able to be a good remake for this game.
Oh, no, definitely. Like I love the idea of the Final Fantasy VII remake, but thinking that they could make a remake for like, Final Fantasy VI, it's like, I don't know. Though, I'll be honest, in Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn, they did, like, a whole event where it was Final Fantasy 6 themed, and you actually got to fight on the Phantom Train.
Oh, nice.
And it was a 3D version of the Phantom Train. Only problem is you could not suplex it. I'm completely disappointed by that. I mean, I know that only one character has the muscles and the sheer machismo needed to suplex a train. But still, you know, I would have wanted the Easter egg. And then the Kefka battle. Holy Jesus, no. Oh my god. Like, I heard the music. I saw the cinematics.
Dancing Mad.
Yeah.
Dancing, like, Mad is just like a masterpiece of, like, a song. You know, like, everybody will say, okay, so you go to One Winged Angel and all of this stuff. Like Final Fantasy VII is, like, it's a good second, but it's not even close to six. Like, Final Fantasy VI was, I think, on a league of its own. Like, Dancing Mad is an amazing song.
And that's the thing. Like, for the Final Fantasy franchise, this is my top. This is my top game. And it was a hard choice at some points. But then the more I remember, like, what it meant to me, like, this is the game that got me really deep into like RPGs. Like, Final Fantasy IV did a good job.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VI was just a step above. And that's saying a lot, because honestly, one of my favorite Final Fantasy games is Final Fantasy X. And that game has music that'll wreck your they'll wreck everything in your heart. Yeah, no, like Return to Sanarkand and all that, like that.
Sanarkand is an amazing song.
But honestly, like Final Fantasy VI just took it for me because it's just that good.
I think I just really, 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 really hated Blitzball.
Nobody likes Blitzball, and if anybody tells you they like Blitzball, they're lying to you.
I think, but it was enough for me to get really angry at the game. I mean, the whole fact that I never understood if Titus was real on top of that. It's like,
see, but I didn't like 10. Like, I tried playing it. Like, to me, 8 and 10 were, like, I never played them. And I got 10 recently when they put it out in all the consoles again. I want to play 10 sometime. never played 10.
For, like, the whole Cloud thing, you have to, like, you have to play the game, everything. You have to get 100%, 101% basically to get the secret ending, and then to kind of like cement it, you have to play Final Fantasy X2, do that one 100%, and then you get the ending that brings closure to that whole thing.
And I'm gonna have to play X2 then, because I don't know, something about it.
Like legit, like once you play X, like once you, if you did Final Fantasy X to the maximum everything and you got the secret ending, and then you play X-2 and get the secret ending there, which is not easy. Not easy at all. Then you would get the final secret scene that pretty much brings closure to that, which also would have led to Final Fantasy X-3. Which, like, if you find the leaks of, like, what the story was, it's really good. But they just didn't want to take the risk on it, which kind of sucks, because, you know...
If they had any!
Exactly. It's like, this is where I would keep my memories of Final Fantasy X-3, if I had any!
It's crazy, because Final Fantasy is just, like, as a franchise, there's so many games, you know? Like, and I love 13. People don't like 13. It's one of my few platinum trophies in PlayStation 2, was it, or 3?
3.
I loved 13. It was such an amazing game.
Like, I'll be honest, I tried to give 13 a shot, because, like, Final Fantasy 12, the original, before they fixed it, in my opinion, like, it left a really sour taste in my mouth. Which sucks, because I like the Final Fantasy Tactics universe, like the Game Boy Tactic ones. It's based on the 12 world.
The bunny world? The bunny girl didn't do it?
No, no, because honestly, like, the guild hunts, the way you acquired items, the bazaar, all that, oh god, it just irked the hell out of me, and I just couldn't complete it.
So, to me, and just to put it out there, like, Final Fantasy is, like, 6 is the best. Most probably 7 and 9 are the next two, and then 4 and then 13.
See, for me, the top 3 for Final Fantasy are 6, 9, well, no, 6, 10, and 9.
Okay.
Like, I like 7, I really like 7, but just 9 goes back to the fantasy part of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 9 hits me in the heart, man. Like, I like 9 more than, like, it's tough. Like, to me, Final 7 and Final 9 are right there. Like, they're just so good. But 9 I just like so much. It has so much feeling to it that I thought was missing in 7 and 8.
8, oh god, 8 is just a cluster. And I can't say the other part, but
I never got into 8. I didn't like the whole, like, switching between characters, like the stories or whatever, Laguna, whatever his name was. Hated it.
Like, honestly, the only thing I really liked about it was the summons and, like, the overworld and everything. It was good, but I don't know, the story for 8 was just it was confusing.
Yeah.
It wasn't well done. The graphics were not the best, in my opinion.
Coming out of 7, that was surprising.
Exactly. But 7 you understood, because 7's like, okay, this is the first foray into Polygon Final Fantasy.
Yep.
8 is like, oh, look, we're trying to be more advanced, and the cutscenes were beautiful. Everything else looked like not good.
And then the jump from 8 to 9 was amazing.
Exactly. And then 9 beautiful. Came along, and we got our best boy Vivi, and you know, everything was right with the world.
And the tie-dye ball.
We do not speak of Ozma. Not until I have to deal with it in my playthrough.
You'll get there. And then you will get there again.
I remember, like, and then you will get there again. 9 was amazing. Yeah, like 9 was amazing. I remember there was a summon like that had like a mech come, like you could make it into a mech, right? It was like an airship that
Arc.
And it didn't start like that, right? You had to do something to make it a mech.
No. Remember Final Fantasy. There's two. There's like Arc, but there's also Alexander. Alexander starts out like just the castle, and then when Aiko comes in and something happens, then it transforms. It goes full transformer into like Alexander, and then it's like full power, Jesus Christ, holy element.
Yeah. It's been good. This has been a good walk down memory lane. I've really appreciated this episode. Like, made me think back of a lot of things, a lot of really fun memories of like childhood and like the last maybe 20 years. I really appreciated going back all through all of this like history.
So again, and also something we have to say is these lists. They're our opinion. It is solely our opinion. No hatred, please. You know, this is just three geeks talking about this, and it's our opinion on the games that had the most impact on our lives.
Fully biased. And we did that disclaimer at the beginning. It's our fully biased best games of all time episode.
I don't know. I think I hate some games. That's... I don't want to not be untruthful. Something.
Oh, no, yeah. There's some games that I really do not like.
I mean, and there has to be things even within those amazing games that you hated. For example, The Wall Masters. Nobody liked The Wall Masters.
Yeah, I hated how they destroy some of like really beloved franchises. Like Fallout, I played Fallout 1, Fallout 2. Fallout 3 I played a little bit. Fallout 4 was amazing. Fallout 76 was like a cluster.
Well, here's one thing very interesting that you may find interesting. I would have to say that in the Final Fantasy franchise, I would put 15 above all games except 6, 7, and 4. Even above 9, in my opinion. I don't know why, I just loved Final 15.
See, I haven't played it enough. So, like, I haven't played it, so I can't really give my opinion on that one. But, I don't know, dude. Final Fantasy 9 and 10 are pretty high competition. I don't know how I could beat it, but...
Well, the thing is,
I never finished 15. Like, it's a Final Fantasy. I put dozens of hours into it, and I never finished it. It just lost appeal as it progressed. I think it's that threshold of like the point of no return is really early, so you feel like you have to complete so much of the game early that I just like lost track of the story. That is the flaw. And I dropped it.
That is the flaw of that game. Yeah, that it had way too many side quests, and the point of no return is too early. It's too darn
like
early.
13 chapters. It's like chapter 5 or something like that was the point of no return. That's insane. Like whoever came up with that idea was kind of stupid. Because you should be able to just explore as you progress the story.
Well, that was the whole Final point. Fantasy Star 4. That was the whole point. But then they added that point of no return way too early, which I kind of feel like what happened was that they were out of budget or out of time. And they had to force to linearize the rest of the game with what they had, and that ended up being a very early point of no return. And
that's I think that's what killed it for me. The game was enjoyable. It was not memorable. Let's just put it that way. Like to me, Final Six and Final Nine are games that are just like the stories are amazing.
Well, the problem with
and Final Seven as well.
The problem with that major flaw in Final 15 is that the story at the end gets pretty good in my opinion, but it threw so many players out off by having so many side quests before the point, an early point of return, that you never got to get to that point.
Pass it. Yeah, you could spend easily 100 hours before Chapter 5.
And that's bad, because I feel that the bad guy in the final boss in Final 15, in a way, was as good as a Kefka-like person. Not as evil as Kefka, but he was one of the few bad guys that actually got what they wanted. Like Kefka. At the very end.
Okay.
And I was saddened that so many people were thrown off by the excessive amount of side quests that they never got to that point where the story actually got good.
That's what happened to me. Yeah, that's what happened to me. I had like 80 hours and I didn't want to go past that point of no return. And I just knew I could get more like weapons. I could get more summons, and
oh, that happened to me.
I just lost interest.
That happened to me. I knew the point of no return was coming early, so I did everything and spent 200 hours in the game. I persisted. I got to the point where the game's story got really good, and it was ended up being a good experience. But yeah, that was major flaw. Point of no return was too early.
Yeah. Yep.
See, if I ever do get through the game, I'll give my opinion on it. But for now, Final Fantasy VI all the way.
Oh yeah, yep. Definitely. All right, so we went through our top 10 list. We might debate later whether this will eventually turn into two episodes.
There's a lot of emotion in this.
I might have to record an intermission like ending for this, but it'll work out for us. More episodes.
It was fun. This was a really fun episode. A really good walk down memory lane.
So coming up for us, not episode wise, we don't know what the heck we're gonna do later. But we do know that coming up next, I am going to get in the sidecasting genre, and I want to discuss a very important topic that I I feel that I think I need another perspective on this topic. And on that sidecast, we want to talk about the relationship between Aerith and Cloud Strife.
I have my opinions on that, but we'll save that for the sidecast, because I know Ari has she has a lot of opinions on that too.
And I found very hilarious in the remake hearing our friend Aerith say the S word.
Oh, she's become a meme. That's beautiful.
Not even Tifa has said it yet. To the point I am. And she did. And I found it hilarious because, well, I guess I'll leave it for the sidecast, but yeah, I've never in real life met anybody that as an adult would be like Aerith. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting sidecast. So that's what's coming up from us. We'll plan it out. We'll release it somewhere. Will it have a Borderlands background? I have no clue. We'll see.
Yeah, that's just Twitch on Xbox. You have to put a game on even to do the just chatting. I'm still trying to see if we can just do like Twitch, but with like directly through Twitch and the website. That'll probably be easier. But we'll find a way. Life finds a way.
All right, so since this eventually will be a double episode, this will be concluding our 9th episode of the podcast. As we've said before on the previous announcements that I will have to redo again when we split it, you can find us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Everything will have Geeks and Gripes unless we're forced to have an at symbol in front of it. We have our Patreon. Please become our Patreon. A lot of these sidecasts will eventually become exclusive content on the Patreon. And, this is expensive. It's we would definitely like your support if we can, and we will definitely find a way to make those donations worthwhile. And we look forward to episode, I guess, 10 now, coming in the future.
Yep, now we got a brainstorm on that one.
Yep. So play Final Fantasy VI, please. Yeah, if you died and never played it, you never really lived, I guess. And have a good quarantine rest of your day.
Laters, people.
See ya, guys.
Stay safe out there.
Stay safe.
Sad.